It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 20th day of July, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you would like to be part of the madcap multimedia real-time wacky zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live, to wit, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and well, all kinds of times all around the world, because that is, in fact, the reach of this program. Yes, indeed. We haven't hit all the countries yet. Still working on Iceland, but you know, still working on, let's see, I think we need listeners in Guyana, Paraguay and Uruguay, but we got listeners all around the world. I see the data from time to time when I'm uploading to Podbean. Oh, speaking of uploading to Podbean, let me finish. So if you pick out a screen name and a password over at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, you will be immediately greeted by the merry band, which at this point in time includes Anatole, Barkway, Hoghead, Squeaky, Steve from Georgia Stan, VT Blom. More to come, I'm sure. We stand not upon ceremony for being on time for the top of the program. Not at all. And all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has just the same elected not to fold space into the burning heart of a neutron star this evening, namely the Northern California. It's right... It's probably hot there in the man cave. So come on by. There'll be a good time in the room this evening, and there's a good time out of the room. It's just a good time. You know, we've got 3 hours to work with here, and we try to have a lot of fun. And yet somehow or another managed to talk about serious issues that affect the day. And in short, keep each other, well, you know, sane. Or at least approaching it. This is a listener-supported radio operation. We try to raise money every night, and sometimes we don't. Well, sometimes we do what we did last night and lay a goose egg. We had a fundraising goal last night of $380, and a goose egg followed. And that means that tonight the fundraising goal is up to a terrifying $630. Ouch. On this, the 20th day of the month, we have only two subscribers. Now, I figured it out. If we are ever to get to the fantastic, fabulous, fearsome, frolicsome 400, what we ultimately need is 13 $10 subscribers per day all month long. And so that would mean that today we would need, for instance, 11 more. 11 folks at $10, that's $110. So if you'd like to be a subscriber, you can always just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute, click the little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, and bing, you will be you'll be part of the sustaining band of monthly subscribers. Okay, so that's how that works. If we could, I think the odds are pretty long against us getting 11 more subscribers today, but still, that's the goal. And that would take the fundraising goal for today down to, if we got 11 more subscribers, that would take the fundraising goal down to $520. $520. However you want to help out, the PayPal interface is there. If you would like to help out via the United States Postal Service, as some have and some do, well, you can always jump in via something as simple as a stamp, you know, and an envelope. Checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, and sent to 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Okay? That's how that works. And just let me know, and I'll let Boss Man Wayne know. And he'll be thrilled. Because with a very few exceptions, folks like Terrace and Brandon and Brock and a few others, the mailbox has been a bit of an echo chamber lately, Boss Man Wayne tells me. But that's where that all stands. $630 to go this evening. And thanks to our two subscribers this evening, we would be worse off without you. Oh, yes, we would. By way of thanking those two subscribers, well, thank you very kindly to Bernice. Thank you, Bernice, longtime subscriber. And thank you to Ralphs. And thank you to Carl. I was wrong. We have three subscribers. So that means it's actually $620 this evening. And thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed to Helen for jumping in this evening. So, yeah, taken together, we have $620 to raise this evening. Steve says, damn it, I want to do more, but I will put a $10 challenge on the table. Thank you. Steve's there with $10. If there's somebody to stand with Steve, nobody likes to be by themselves, you know. So let's, that'll take us down to $600, and that's a beautiful thing. So that's taken care of. This is just some technical, God only knows. And I do not know why. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, who had, he doesn't know why. Why am I talking about myself in the third person? The devil's own time trying to get Tuesday evening's program uploaded. Some people downloaded it. Some people were able to download it. Other people were not. Some people, they got the notification because they're subscribed to the RSS feed over at whiterosesociety.org. And Bupkis, so today I went into, I went into the files, wiped out everything, re-uploaded the 18th file, and I don't know what the status is on that because I haven't heard from anybody yet. But that does bring up the issue of Podbean. Podbean is a good fallback. It's a good way just to get the program generally. Podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, podbean.com. Just search Bob Kincaid. You'll find it. And it'll It'll pop up there, and if you subscribe, well, again, it's one of those preference things. Some people tell me that the Podbean app on their various mobile devices works great. Other people tell me it's not user-friendly. So I think that's kind of user-dependent. But we try to be ubiquitous here and get the and put up the program in as many places as we can. And eventually, I'm probably going to go to SoundCloud. And we'll find more places to put the program. Random observation question, courtesy of Stephen, New York, who says, am I alone in feeling some guilt at making light of John McCain's random questions to James Comey about the Hillary and Trump investigations and wondering if it was the brain tumor doing that? You've got a pretty highly highly developed hair trigger sense of morals and ethics, Steve. And so I don't necessarily know that you're alone in that, but I had a brief exchange on Twitter this morning, or maybe last night. I don't remember. I think it was this morning. Yeah, it was this morning. And someone over on Twitter said something in the American psyche that makes them feel decent by ignoring how much truly evil shit bad people do as soon as they get sick, and pointed out these radical Tea Party fanatics were enabled to seize and wreck our nation with the tacit but explicit support of people like McCain. Yeah, my only observation on that was that we all, as human beings, have a sense of there but for the grace of Godism. And you don't even you can be an agnostic, an atheist, a flying spaghetti monster worshiper. It doesn't matter. It's the idea that it can happen to any of us. And probably will happen to a significant number of us. And death itself happens to all of us. Yeah, even the Buddha, even Muhammad, even, you know, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi. It is a sort of existential, it's a manifestation of existential dread. Does a brain cancer diagnosis erase the bad things that a man has done? No. Or one, a person? No. Can't. But within the bounds of Jesus, and you know, it's part of I would hate to have that happen to me, ism. Maybe we, the sense of belief, the desire to believe in the unseen runs deep in the human psyche. And we try to push back things like our own mortality as often as we can. The most hardcore atheist in the world might, walking along, look up and see that there's and say, that's bad luck to walk under a ladder, and walk around. Now, that could also be a function of common sense, because shit can fall down on you from a higher perch, you know, if you walk under a ladder, or even if you walk near one, if there's somebody up there. And sometimes if there's not. But the most hardcore non-believer can be, at the same time, very much motivated, or if not motivated, affected by things that are not necessarily rational decisions. Just stepping on cracks. Break your mother's back. Picking up a penny, or deciding whether to pick up a penny on the ground based on whether it's heads up or tails up. Just because, you know, we are advanced primates whose brains are hardwired to get us around having to think about our own mortality all the time. So, no, I don't think the guilt is called for. If anything, you can probably award yourself a magic eight ball with a cracked screen that reads "Answer hazy, ask again later." Because when the brain begins to have problems, they will manifest themselves. The trick lies in having a diagnostician, which you're not going to have unless you have health insurance. I might just sort of throw that in there. Who can differentiate between between something that is benign and something that's trouble. I mentioned last night the wonderful memoir by Jimmy Breslin, I Want to Thank My Brain for Remembering Me. It's a great book. It's an engaging, quick read. And he more than likely would have died of a sudden rupture of a brain aneurysm had he not had a good diagnostician who was willing to say, you know, that's probably not a good thing for you to have. You know, double vision, blurred vision, seeing everything twice. And began to use the diagnostic tools that we have to sort the problem out. And I guess maybe a greater concern for me as a concerned troll is that anybody who talks about John McCain's illness in terms of what it means in the larger picture of the national conversation in which we are nominally engaged is somehow making this political. You know, every time some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, lawful gun owner decides to become an awful gun owner in a split second and, you know, mows down 13 toddlers or things that NRA members are prone to do. The first thing, if we say, oh, God damn it, we got to do something to keep this from happening. Maybe it starts with the guns. And the right-wingers are there, oh, God damn you commie. This is not the time to talk about our freedom to arm bears. It's too soon, political, because. And so we sit back and say, okay, we'll just go to the funerals and we'll buy flowers and that's all we'll do. And meanwhile, back at their headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia, the nation's most wealthy, most politically powerful domestic terror organization, the National Rifle Association, cackles. We got him to do it again. We told him not to be political. We told him it was too soon. And the suckers fell for it again.
God, this is so easy. How much money did we make today off of the blood of children? I don't know. I hope there's still some blood on the bills to lick up. Says Wayne LaPierre. But I hope that this will enter into the conversation. Because John McCain's illness only becomes apparent. Remember, he just went in to have a blood clot taken out back behind his eyebrow. Now, you want to talk about somebody whose magic eight ball doesn't have a cracked screen and always read "Answer Hazy, Ask Again Later"? Malloy. Before the news even broke last night about McCain, Malloy said the night before, this is a lot worse. I had the exact opposite bet, that this was political machination at its very finest. Is it possible I might be a greater cynic than Malloy is? No, couldn't be. Might just be that Malloy's a little sharper. A lot sharper. Whole lot sharper. But he went in, blood clot behind his eyebrow. I mean, Jesus, I've got eyebrows you'd have to go after with a weed eater to even find out. I mean, another 10 years or so, and I'll have Thufir Hawat eyebrows. That is, of course, a non-obligatory evening's reference to Dune. We don't have obligatory Dune references, only obligatory Star Trek references. Definitely Star Trek. If you dare try to imagine what happens to John McCain without access to health care and health insurance, well, he muddles along until one day you get the scary music on Chicken Noodle News and Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and the rest of them. Dum 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 dum. This is a breaking news special report. John McCain dead. And, really? I didn't even know he was sick. So actually having access to health care coverage that provides you access to health care makes a big difference for people. So depending on what stage the cancer is at, they can deal with it aggressively or palliatively. And, of course, all the news today is, oh, golly, he's always been a fighter. He's not. What did Meghan McCain say? My dad never surrendered to anybody, and he's not going to surrender to cancer. Sounds better with a John Wayne impression. But, okay, so that's what you say. To provide encouragement, because heart attacks, they're terrible. Heart disease is terrible. Various other forms of disease are terrible, but cancer, that's the one that scares the piss out of everybody, because it can take so many forms, and it sneaks up on you through any number of a variety of methods. Barkway in the chat room pointing out, not every case of cancer is the same, but outcomes from the Keynes type of cancer are not that great for folks his age. Didn't work out too well for Ted Kennedy. Meanwhile, Sister Carol Baker has surprisingly arrived home darned early for her. And Cat Stevens is home as well. Cat Stevens has been having some diagnostic work. No elevated white count. No x-ray, or the x-ray is clear. Blood work all comes back normal. Add to that an exam and a steroid shot for the cough and wheezing that has no explanation since the lungs are clear. And I got a bill, says Carol, for $250 to find out he's faking it so he doesn't have to go to school. Allergies, maybe? We care about our animals. We care about our people. And we do so on an individual and personal basis. And it makes it, we love our furry people in some ways as much or more than we love the some human ones. Get well soon, Cat Stevens, and quit faking. But see, when I hear, just so you'll know, when I hear the words brain and cancer at the same time, I don't necessarily think about Ted Kennedy. I think about a place that very few people in the United States or the world ever think about at all. Mm-hmm. I think about a little community here in West Virginia. Prenter Holler. P-R-E-N-T-E-R, Prenter. Just one of those little places that got settled a long time ago and became co-opted into the coal industry in its heyday down in Boone County. Because, see, brain cancer is not, it's not an epidemic. Some forms of brain cancer occur once in 100 in a population of 100,000. You've heard me mention this before, but in this context, it bears mentioning again. Down in Prenter Holler, tiny little community. In five or six houses, a form of brain cancer appeared that occurs only once in a general population of 100,000 people. And once again, there's one of those numbers that's hard for us to wrap our heads around, 100,000. Even if you live in Midtown Manhattan, even if you live surrounded by millions of people, it's hard to wrap your head around the notion of 100,000 of them. We can get a better sense for it, say, at maybe a basketball game in a big arena, because we're in the same room, so to speak, with 15,000 people, and they're really noisy, and they take up a certain amount of space, and we can look around the room and say, well, son of a bitch, that's what 15,000 people looks like. Because back home in your little town of 15,000 people, well, you're not all together all the time. 100,000? Imagine a football game. Here we go with the sports analogies again. Thanks, Bob. There goes the audience. Not a professional football game. They don't draw this kind of numbers. But a football game, say, at Neyland Stadium on the banks of the Tennessee River in Knoxville, Tennessee. Or what, up in the Big Horseshoe in Columbus. And I'm not sure how many the stadium holds at Ann Arbor. I think the UT stadium is still the biggest. And that holds what, 102, 104, 106,000 people. And they routinely get them all in there too. And it is an amazing thing to behold that you can get that many human beings in what is a relatively small space. Jesus, the stadium at LSU isn't that big, but they've added on to it by going upward, but they've stayed inward to the point that when I went down there several years ago for a Mountaineer game, it was like looking straight down at the football field. And there were, you know, a solid 80,000 people. Okay, yeah, Sparky points out I went to a NASCAR race that 100, 120,000 people at it in Vegas. That's a good one. Now, imagine that crowd, and you're sitting there, and somewhere, one tiny pinpoint of humanity gets cancer. A particular form of brain cancer. Well, now, how do we comprehend that? I mean, that's fairly long odds. But now imagine that in five or six houses in one little lonely holler in Boone County, West Virginia, the same kind of brain cancer hit six houses, one, two, three, four, five, six, and they weren't relatives. They had no genetic connection. The only thing they did was drink from similar wells, and they all breathed the same air blowing down on them from a mountaintop removal operation. How about that? You'd look up and say, you know, that can't be random. But that happened. And one person, I think in one instance, two in one of the houses, in each house, somebody died of a horrible form of brain cancer. All because we have an outlaw rogue industry in this country that doesn't care if 50,000 people, they don't care if every single individual in that entire stadium gets that kind of brain cancer, because it's good for the company. Dig it? I got to thinking about this today because I saw an article over at Bloomberg by Stephen Lee. In reference to the meeting I attended last week in Washington, D.C. If you want to read it, you can go to it's a couple of days old. Goes back yesterday. Stephen Lee, Stephen Lee, Lee. BNA.com. And it talks about what went down in the in that public hearing. And what, of course, grabbed me was the response of the coal industry. And this will probably... well, I think we share some feelings here about the coal industry. But the scientists said it's pretty clear that there's something going on here. Mark Squillis, law professor at the University of Colorado, told Bloomberg BNA that the anecdotal evidence is pretty overwhelming that people who live in these coal fields are likely to suffer ill health effects. At a minimum, we need to try to understand the causal links better. You know, that's at a minimum. However, also there was in attendance was a creep, and I'm sorry, it's just my opinion, a conscienceless, soulless individual by the name of Jason Bostick, who is president of the West Virginia Coal Association. He walked out while I was speaking, by the way. When I started talking about a coal industry that had not given a tinker's damn about the people they poisoned and killed for over 150 years, because, you know, that's factual. But he didn't like it, so he left. He said, correlation doesn't mean causation. And they don't necessarily like the precautionary principle upon which the AIC Act, the only bill, by the way, introduced in Congress that could end this human rights, human health crisis nightmare in Appalachia. The AIC Act is based on the precautionary principle. Now, me, I don't necessarily share the opinion given by Joe Lovett from Appalachian Mountain Advocates. He said all this science effort is too little too late, 5 years too late, because far fewer mountaintop removal mines are in operation. Lovett said they should have done something about it years ago when it was a bigger problem than it is now. Yeah. Okay. But we'll go on learning things. We Appalachian types, we'll go on learning lessons taught to us by our betters. And we'll keep going to funeral homes and funerals. We'll keep sitting vigils by bedsides. And there won't be any tweets going out from former President Obama or any senators saying, I know how tough, fill in the name in the blank of the random Appalachian person is. Cancer's never found a bigger, a tougher opponent. It's not going to happen. A lot of those senators sending out tweets to John McCain today have staff who have looked at us blankly when we sat in their offices telling them about the cancers ravaging our communities. This is not to be bitter, but to be factual. There's some people that shouldn't get cancer and some people that shouldn't get cancer, you know, less. And you wonder, look, as a young man, John McCain was exposed to God only knows what kind of chemicals in his military career. Sometimes these things, well, there are things that we do in our modern lives that we probably oughtn't, that extend beyond, you know, eating gluten. So I thought there was probably something in order. It was in order to put a bigger bow around all of this. Because, Lord God, Billy Bob, you could not get away from the story today. Not to say that people should, but it's a matter of perspective and context. And that is what I try to provide here. Note coming from Michael in Madison. Battling with cancer is the subject line. All this talk of battling and fighting cancer and how tough John McCain is, whether it be from Meghan McCain or President Obama or whoever, reminds me of something Jason Isbell tweeted last year. And in that flip side lies the rub. The tweet in question, Jason said, "Can't believe news outlets are still using the phrase, loses battle with cancer." That is not, Jason Isbell said, what happens when cancer kills someone. And I think that ties into the whole notion of we have to anthropomorphize things in our culture, being as we are a very warlike culture. We turn it into warfare analogies and battles, and you know, we've got a war on drugs and a war on obesity and a war on poverty and a war on opioids and a war on gluten, and you get the idea. And for some reason or another, we can't come up with a better metaphor. To the point that it's actually difficult. Contend with? I don't know. But Jason Isbell was right. It's not a matter of losing. Because, remember, absent some significant scientific advances in a relatively short period of time. Cancer was a lot, it has been a lot more successful than it is, than it presently is. Some people survive. But, you know, we say somebody lost their battle with cancer. And yet, if they die at the age of 98, we don't say that they lost their battle with death. Because nobody loses that battle. Or death never loses that battle. Because it's not a battle. It's a natural process. Now, what's unnatural? What's unnatural is contracting cancers as a result of exposure to things that human beings ought not otherwise be exposed to. Things like benzene or polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons that come from the blasting away of layers of rock to expose, you know, seams of coal that are 800 feet under the ground. Unnatural. Marty pointing out, cancer, like death, always seems to bat last. Cancer, like nature. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought the topic was ripe for discussion. And thanks very kindly to Little Cletus. I just got a note that she's a good girl. Little Cletus is such a good girl. Laying listening intently in front of her stereo speaker this evening. Hello, Cletus. To get us going this evening. Thank you, Cletus, and Steve, and Miss Karen, and Twiggy. That gets us going. That meets Steve's challenge in New York, plus some, so that's two members of the fraternity of Steve standing it together. Thank you very much as well to Larry. Between Steve and Larry, we've managed to crawl under the $600 mark. That takes us down to $590 to go. And it'll go to $580 when Steve does his match. So, ta-da. 58 more folks at $10 a piece. It could happen. It really could. So maybe instead of focusing on an individual case, although all cases are individual, maybe we would do better to think as a group and how you protect the group. And that becomes a very complicated discussion. In the Bloomberg News article, one of the coal assholes said, well, you know, if we had to use the precautionary principle all the time, we probably wouldn't have peanut butter, because peanut butter kills somebody. No, really. Go read the article. Jesus Christ. Dicks. But that's not what it's about. The precautionary principle says that if we're doing something, and by we, what that usually means is if somebody out there in capitalist land has decided they can make a whole bunch of money doing something, then they're going to want to do that regardless of what they do to other people to get their money. The coal industry being a classic case in point. And the absence of any precaution whatsoever is the history of the rise of industrialism in the United States. Hello, Love Canal. Hello, thalidomide babies. Stephen Lee at Bloomberg spoke to Luke Popovich, who is a spokes creep for the National Mining Association. You might remember the National Mining Association as the group who hired their in-house lobbying firm, an outfit called Cowell Mooring in D.C., to attack the birth defect study when it came out, showing that mountaintop babies born in mountaintop removal areas are more likely to suffer birth defects. And you might recall that Cowell Mooring responded to the birth defect study by saying, well, you see, this study is not statistically valid because it didn't take into account the fact that hillbillies fuck their sisters. And hillbilly girls fuck their brothers. Rawr. Now, they didn't say that exactly. The study isn't valid because it fails to take into account consanguinity. And you might recall misspelled consanguinity. Ding, 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 which is all just a hoity-toity way of striking up the banjos, and sure do got a pretty mouth, squeal like a pig. Phew! Right. The best he could muster, Luke Popovich, was to say, from what we learned yesterday, it's plain to us that there remain many unanswered questions surrounding the issue. Which means that we should just go ahead and continue blowing the hell out of Appalachia so that the member companies of the National Mining Association can continue to pay their shareholders who live far, 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 far away from mountaintop removal operations and don't have to worry about breathing little microscopic pieces of silica that tear hell through a person's system just like a little hunk of jagged glass. But Jason Bostick said, now this is what Jason Bostick said about every human being who was reported to have been sickened who lived near a mountaintop removal operation. I know there are other issues, but this is near and dear to my heart. Please bear with me. This is the head of the West Virginia Coal Association. We're talking about people who die of brain cancer, lung cancer, heart disease. We're talking about babies born with birth defects of breathing and brain and heart. Of them, Jason Bostick said, I'm willing to bet you all those people who got sick also have TV, cell phones, and probably eat peanut butter. Yeah, because we wouldn't have TV, cell phones, and eat peanut butter if we had the precautionary principle in effect. My goodness gracious, to say that about, you know, people battling cancer.
You dick!
Exactly. But, you know, it's just hillbillies. And if we've learned anything over the past couple of hundred years, it's that Well, we are some of America's most expendable human beings. Really expendable. So we'll move on in the next hour to another topic. But I thought this merited mention. If you want to, we can talk about Comrade Kumquat's little sit-down tete-a-tete with the New York Times, in which he pretty much guaranteed that at some point in time, he's going to fire the out of Robert Mueller. And said, yeah, it would be a red line for Mueller to investigate my family business dealings. Definitely a red line. So then news immediately broke that Robert Mueller had expanded his investigation to include the family's business dealings. Yeah, right. So we can expect that. But it was a bizarre and rambling interview. Of course, they all are. But there was something noteworthy along the way. Because, again, I confess, Agnes and I have this filthy little habit where we wake up at Sparrow's fart and immediately turn on the iPad and watch that program. Because it does. It's, you know, we've already got good Todd out there taking one for the team and checking in on Washington Journal. And I can't bear the ABC or CBS programs anyway. And that pretty much leaves me with Fox and Friends. Why doesn't PBS do a morning news show? You know, now that Sesame Street's gone over to HBO. Oh, well, maybe they do. Maybe I just don't know. But along the way, hi, Morning Joe gang. Hi. You might recall a couple of months ago, I actually went so far as to read an excerpt from William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury, part of an excerpt from the Benji portion of the book, published, 1927? And drew a direct, a bright, bright line between Donald Trump and Benji, the idiot. Not using that as value judgment, but as an adjective, legitimate adjective. Benji, the idiot, in Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury. It was a couple of months back. Lo and behold, this morning, 2 months later, Joe Scarborough says, everything he says is beginning to sound like William Faulkner. Joe, I didn't know you were listening, buddy. Hey, how you doing, Mika? You know, if you let something like that wait for a couple of months, then... Or maybe it's just his southern roots and my southern roots or something like that. Roll Tide, Joe, roll Tide. But it's true. Except he doesn't. Trump doesn't sound like Faulkner. He sounds like a Faulkner character. So, you know, just gratifying. And once again, I remind you that if you are a part of the Horn Family Community Congregation, odds are somewhere along the way you're going to look up and go, "Hey, I'm 2 months in front of the curve." Yeah, it's all straight road out here. How about that? All right, so break time. We have $580 to cover in fundraising to get even for this week. Not in a sort of, I'll see you in hell. Not that kind of get even, but just to keep up with fundraising. And... it would be nice if we could take a big hunk out of that, because there are bills to pay. And the D.C. trip, ate up resources that would have otherwise gone to bill paying. And that's just the way we operate around here, because we don't have any Russian oligarchs. And we don't have any sponsorship by skeevy Russian websites that publish stories like Pope Francis endorses Donald Trump. Just don't. George Soros has proven himself to be as useless as tits on a boar. And so it's just us. Just us. But for years and years and years now, you have maintained this community. And I'm not going to get all panicky, but it would be nice to knock this stuff down so that we don't have to do, so that I don't have to wonder all day on Friday if we're going to be able to pull off a Friday on the Front Porch human miracle. So there we are. Now, Conversation Radio, anyone? Bueller? If you want to get involved in the program, if you want to carry on a conversation, 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. H-O-R-N. The other number, 304-574-8178. And, of course, from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And here soon, once we've got the spare scratch to do it with, there will be a new gizmo in line and another number. I mean, we've already got the number. It's just a matter of getting the gizmo. And that'll mean one more way of reaching the program. Okay? So if you want to do some conversating, we can do it. If you don't, I can. I am not without the ability to run a filibobster. So, and yes, Michael and Madison, you read my mind, because this touches both issues, bumper-wise. And being as how it's Thursday, we also have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So, hang out, sit back, relax. This is the Horn. We'll be back.
Shutting down. Goddamn Reagan's in the White House, and nobody gives a damn. Double digit unemployment. TVA be shutting soon. While over there in Huntsville, putting people on the moon. So I took to running numbers for this man I used to know. And I sell a few narcotics, and I sell a little. Now, but I'm getting more than by. It'd be tough to make a living, but a man's just gotta try. If I died in Cobra County, would it make the evening news? They're too busy blowing rockets, putting people on the moon. She didn't get no chemo, and our lives it was destroyed. Nothing ever changes. Cemetery gets more full. And over there in nations, they all line sacks of shit. They say better days upon us, but it's sucking left on tip. And the preacher on the TV says it ain't too late for me. But I bet he drives a Cadillac and I'm broke with hungry mouths to feed.
It's Thursday, July 20, 2017.
Climate change is real. It is a threat to organized human existence.
California legislature extends landmark cap and trade program, but
I think the lungs of people in California are actually more important than the market.
Environmental justice groups say it's not enough. Trump administration reopens the U.S. Arctic for offshore drilling. Plus,
do you remember how hot June was? It was so hot that planes were grounded. They couldn't fly.
June was the third hottest on record globally, and 2017 is already breaking records.
All of those broken records and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It is a threat to organized human existence. Maybe not in my life. I'll be dead. But a lot of you people are going to be alive.
Don't threaten me, Jerry Brown. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desiree, you've got an update on the small and disorganized Tropical Storm Dawn.
Yes, as we reported in our last episode, the completely coincidentally named Tropical Storm Dawn is now weakening in the Caribbean as forecast. But now, also completely coincidentally, the next storm that forms in the Pacific will be called Tropical Storm Hillary.
Oh, man.
I kid you not.
Don't get excited about it. I think it will never pan out.
Oh.
Just saying.
Ouch. Meanwhile, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced this week that June 2017 was the third hottest June ever recorded for the planet. Plus, so far, the first half of 2017 is already the second hottest globally, second only to 2016. Now, scientists say that is remarkable in the absence of an El Nino to boost global temperatures. 2017 so far is beating all previous record years except for the super El Nino year of 2016.
So were it not for the El Nino last year, which always makes it a little bit warmer, this would definitely be the hottest year on record, at least to date.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, fantastic news.
In California, after a bruising battle and some horse trading with the oil industry, the California State Legislature this week passed major bipartisan legislation to extend the state's landmark cap and trade system through 2030. It caps carbon emissions from polluting industries that cause global warming and allows them to trade permits to pollute. During the intense negotiations, California's Governor Jerry Brown laid out the stakes in stark and blunt terms.
You're going to see mass migrations, vector diseases, forest fires, Southern California burning up. That's real, guys. This isn't for me. I'm going to be dead. It's for you. It's for you, and it's damn real.
Well, he is 79 years old.
Yes, he is. But major environmental justice groups say that Governor Brown gave away too many concessions to the state's powerful oil industry and that the bills won't do enough to meet California's ambitious targets or cut pollution. That's according to R.L. Miller, elected chair of the State Democratic Party's Environmental Caucus and founder of the grassroots group Climate Hawks Vote, in an interview with the broadcast.
The problem with it is that the people who live next to the refineries mm-hmm. in California have correctly pointed out that this is not doing a darn thing to make their lives any better. And the simple fact that the bill will not enable us to meet our 2030 goals.
Nonetheless, whether it is enough, whether it is good enough, it is good to see states taking action on their own. And it should be noted, this was a bipartisan effort that passed the California State Legislature with two-thirds of the vote in both houses.
Yes, and of course the devil is always in the details, but these are the kinds of policy debates that we need to be having so that voters can make informed choices about the challenges we have ahead.
Now, let's go back to fighting about whether climate change even exists or not.
The Trump administration is, of course, moving in the opposite direction. The Interior Department is reopening U.S. Arctic waters for offshore drilling, granting new permits to an Italian oil company to drill in Alaska's Beaufort Sea, learning nothing, apparently, from Shell Oil's tragic comedy of errors in its failed attempt to drill in the harsh extremes of the Arctic just a few years ago.
Well, maybe this will be even funnier.
Why is that?
Well, Italian accents. Even funnier when they run aground.
Finally, the CEO of one of the country's largest railroads, Hunter Harrison of CSX, told analysts this week that his company won't be buying any new rail cars for transporting fossil fuels. That's because he says, quote, fossil fuels are dead. He says they're not going to go away overnight, but he sees no future for it in the long term.
Wow. Fossil fuels are dead?
Yep.
Glad to hear it. And not a moment too soon. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, it's all right. Even if the sun don't shine, well, it's all right. We're going to the end of the line.
All righty then, 13 minutes past the hour, and we are into the second hour of the program. I just got a note from our buddy Fab of Fab Machine fame, who said, I still don't get the challenge thing, but okay, we'll do a challenge. So there it is. Fab would like to see, well, not see, it's kind of radio. And you get the idea. Fab would like to have ten folks at $10, five folks at $20, one at 100, two at 50, four at 25, however it adds up, match his $100 offer. To take things, that would take things down to $380 to go and go a long way toward cutting into what looks like is going to still wind up being a Friday on the front porch human miracle. But the challenge is on the table, courtesy of Feb. A $100 challenge to knock down the fundraising goal for the week, and you know, get bills paid and things like that. Please, don't let that lie. Don't leave that laying there. Everything that takes a bite out of the hole, or fills a little bit into the hole, because you know we started out at $630, and when we get up above 500, Lassie, come here, girl. Yeah, the horn's down in a hole again, way down in a hole. No, don't run off, baby. Go tell the marshal. We're down a hole. Lassie, are you still there? It's a good baby, good puppy, good girl. Go tell the marshal. Don't chase the cat, Lassie. That's not a cat, Lassie. That's okay. See, now that you've gotten into the skunk, the marshal isn't going to want. Oh, Lassie. So I don't think Lassie's going to be any help. It's up to us. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to Asa, Brother Deacon Asa, for jumping in on Frank's challenge. Thank you, Asa. Thank you indeed. So, like I said, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And it by the way, let me just make a quick note about the bumper song there. That, of course, is the Drive-By Truckers, patron saint band of the horn, from their album The Dirty South of 2004. It's called Putting People on the Moon. And that's an angry piece of music. But it always resonated with me because it's almost, what's that line in there about turning mountains into seas? It's almost like Patterson Hood knew something about mountaintop removal. You know, because that's what happens here. We turn mountains into great big seas of toxic waste. We've got one, you might recall. It's some nearly 10 billion gallons of toxic waste that I guess, you know, the coal industry just says, you know, we'll leave that for the 6 foot, the 6 foot tall race of sentient cockroaches a million years from now. They'll probably go swimming in it. Hell, fooling around with that stuff is probably why they'll mutate into six-foot-tall sentient cockroaches anyway. So good for them. But we do that. We turn mountains into seas here in Appalachia. But being as how it is... being as how it is Thorn in the Side Thursday on here on the Horn... we've got a great big giant thorned pull. And by the way, with Asa jumping in, that means there's $50 to go in meeting Frank's challenge. So again, thanks, Asa. 5 at 10, 10 at 5, etc. I had a note right around airtime from our buddy Ron in Raleigh, who said, I haven't heard you mention Senate Bill S-720. Because I haven't. This is the bill, Ron writes, that criminalizes the boycott movement against Israel. The penalties rise from $250,000 up to $1 million in fines and up to 20 years in prison. Just for supporting the boycott Israel, the BDF, boycott, divest, or BDS, Boycott, Divest, and Sanctions movement. Up to $1 million in criminal and civil penalties, and up to 20 years in prison. Is that disgusting? It is to me. And if you recall the 2016 election, one of the more disturbing aspects of the Clinton campaign was her eagerness to jump out in support of the criminalization of protest against the Israeli government and economy. It was gravely disturbing. Well, they've ratcheted up their efforts. The bill, S-720, the bill, and this isn't, you know, this isn't hyperbole. This isn't being mean. This isn't scaremongering, fearmongering. The bill was crafted by AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, who make sure that they, you know, no dummies they hedge their bets and they co-opt a whole lot of members of Congress from both sides of the aisle. And as far as the First Amendment is concerned, this thing is a real vomitous nightmare. Because Ron, in what he writes, is correct. The civil and criminal penalties rise to $1 million in fines. The criminal aspect can go as high as 20 years in prison. And then, Ron notes, 43 lickspittle senators have signed on to this bill. At which point, I'm sure we tend to say, oh, well, yeah, 43 cent bunch of goddamn Republicans. Now, what did I say a minute ago about them hedging their bets? That's 29 Republicans and 14 Democrats. As Ron puts it, 14 Democrats and 29 Republicans have decided sucking up to Israel is more important than the constitutional rights of American citizens. And the difference really is that stark. This is, how many times have I said on this program that there is a steady progress in this country to reducing the First Amendment to nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry? We have a president who has called for violence against journalists, and the First Amendment is no protection. We have a president who has referred to the Fourth Estate journalists as enemies of the people, and the First Amendment is no protection. Oh, but, you know, if Ken Ham wants to build an Ark theme park, well, he can hide behind the lace skirts of the First Amendment's religious protections, and it works for Ken Ham, and it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. By the way, Ken Ham has a new campaign going on. You know, his Ark Park, taxpayer-funded, replete with legalized discrimination, is up and running down in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan. You can't be gay and work at the Ark Park. You can't be trans and work at the Ark Park. You can't hold hands with another, even if you're straight, with another worker at the Ark Park. And the citizens of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan, are bleeding money into Ken Ham's pockets. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. I just love that line from our prayer meeting Wednesday hymn. Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Praising God ain't hard with a credit card. You get the, you know the song. There's a certain irony in the fact that that comes from an Australian broadcast from the ABC. And Ken Ham is an Australian that no matter how hard we try, Australia won't take back. So lately, Ken Ham decided he was going to take back the rainbow from the homosexuals. Poof does. And so at night, the ark, his fake ark, you know, with the fake dinosaurs, is bathed in rainbow lights. I kid you not. These wing nuts don't have the most well-developed sense of irony, which means that the goddess of irony punks them regularly and routinely. And this one's a real Lulu. If you go over to Raw Story, David Ferguson has it. There's a gorgeous photo of the Ark bathed in rainbow lights, the whole Roy G. Biv thing. I always saw Roy, you know, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. And it's all because he said that, Ken Ham, I'm going to get back to, there's a reason, don't lose me here. Stick around. Todd Starnes got all bent out of shape over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda over the weekend. It's titled
LGBT activist mock Christian ministry's decision to reclaim rainbow.
Really? I didn't know Christians could do that. That's some highfalutin magic there, that rainbow reclaiming. I thought that was a natural phenomenon that really didn't have any ownership whatsoever.
The man behind the world-famous Ark Encounter has decided to reclaim God's rainbow, announcing the massive Ark exhibit will be permanently bathed in rainbow lights.
Ken Ham announced on Facebook, "We now have permanent rainbow lights at the Ark Encounter, so all can see that it's God's rainbow, and He determines its meaning in Genesis 6. Rainbows remind a God will never again judge the wickedness of man with a global flood. Next time the world will be judged by fire." Well, thank you, God, because, you know, that dying by flood just, that's so much worse than getting incinerated, but, you know, with your love. So meanwhile, when Ken Ham made this announcement, all kinds of folks over in social media just had a delightful time of it. One very simple comment: "Look at this gay boat." Mm-hmm. So, Ken Ham has failed to pay back a whole bunch of the money that he's, sucked out of the taxpayers of Kentucky Stand. Yeah, because part of the initial con was, we're gonna build a rainbow art park here, and people will flock. They will fairly flock from all over the world to see our rainbow, see our ark, and maybe we'll bathe it in rainbow lights to take back the rainbow from the homosexuals, and we'll make lots and oodles of money, and we'll give some of it back to the people of Kentucky Stand in the form of economic development. Oops. Nobody's interested in going to see the Ark Park because it's really stupid. used to be driving across what's now I-68 from Morgantown over into Maryland. You'd pass this flat spot by the side of the road that said, Noah's Ark being rebuilt on this spot. I think the sign still says that, but Ken Ham sort of stole the idea and really developed it with a lot more verve and nerve and, well, right. So, you know, he's going to type back the Orion pad. You betcha. Robert in Australia writes, let's not forget that the Ark is sinking. The park is going broke. No one's going to see it. Visitor numbers are way, way down. And Marty points out, what, Marty, did you check it out? What, did you price it to see if maybe that's where you wanted to go on vacation? $40 per adult to get through the gates and $28 for children. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. But I mentioned all of that because, of course, the religion industry gets First Amendment protection with a vengeance. And the religion industry is also four square behind anything that Israel decides to do. The good, the bad, the ugly, the evil, doesn't matter. They've even got an organization called QIFI, Citizens United for Israel. It's run by that the great, massive tub of guts, John Hagee, you know, the one who, the great, big, fat bastard. I'm not fat-shaming, he just is. It's the hypocrisy. Great big fat bastard who yells starve to people on food stamps. Yeah. But no, AIPAC has played its cards well. AIPAC wrote this bill. You can look it up for yourself. It is worth your effort to go and read S-720 because this is probably the most in-your-face assault on the First Amendment to lately come down the pike. Here's the weird part. Its sponsor is Benjamin Cardin, Ben Cardin of Maryland, a Democrat. The bill amends, and this is important, the Export Administration Act of 1979 and declares that it shall be U.S. policy to oppose requests by foreign countries to impose restrictive practices or boycotts against other countries friendly to the United States or against U.S. persons and restrictive trade practices or boycotts fostered or imposed by an international governmental organization or requests to impose such practices or boycotts against Israel. Because Israel can do no wrong, no matter how wrong Israel is. There's actually more meaningful protest in Israel by Israelis against their government's practices than are tolerated in the United States. U.S. persons under S-720 will U.S. persons engaged in interstate or foreign commerce will be prohibited from requesting the imposition of any boycott by a foreign country against a country which is friendly to the United States or supporting any boycott fostered or imposed by an international organization or requesting imposition against Israel. Now, that's just the bill summary. Courtesy of Congress.gov. The whole bill, if you go to Congress.gov and just search Senate Bill 720, you'll get the text. This act may be cited as the anti-Israel and the, I'm sorry, this bill may be cited as the Israel Anti-Boycott Act. And it contains a number of findings. And it's largely window dressing, written by AIPAC. But it's in the penalties portion that the real horrors come into play. Violations of Section 8A, Section 11 of the Export Administration Act of 1979, as continued in effect pursuant to International Emergency Economic Powers Act, is amended by adding the by adding at the end of the following, listen carefully, violations of Section 8A. Whoever knowingly violates or conspires or attempts to violate any provision of Section 8A or any regulation, order, or license issued thereunder shall be fined in accordance with Section 206 of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, 50 U.S.C. 1705. Huh. I don't see anything in there about $250,000 fines. Well, that's because AIPAC ain't stupid. They're not going to put that in the bill for everybody to read. What they want you to do is read that and give up and not go and read 50 U.S.C. 4618 or 50 U.S.C. 1701 et sec. Because if you do, that's where you find out about the fines, the civil and criminal penalties that run from $250,000 per violation up to $1 million and up to 20 years in prison in criminal penalties. That's where you find that. Shit, that sucks. It not only sucks, it spits on the First Amendment. And this is not, and the thing is, this isn't even technically an Israel thing. Because anybody who actually cares about the Constitution would say this if it was a bill about Botswana or Burkina Faso or Bangladesh. I don't know why I'm in the B's. Or India, or Brazil, again with the bees, Bob. Bob? Bees? Oh, Jesus. Because what this is a clear prior restraint on freedom of speech. And understand, please, that of all the sorts of things you can do to offend the First Amendment, governmental prior restraints on speech are considered within the constitutional canon to be among the most odious. And this is nothing but a prior restraint. Now, this isn't a discussion about the BDS movement, technically. Regardless of one's position on the BDS movement, one should despise this bill. Really? 29 Republicans? And some of those, I'm sure, are a bunch of libertarian fucks. You know, the ones who don't like big government, don't want big government on our backs, and believe in liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. A prior restraint is a muzzle on liberty. I happen to support the boycott, divest, and sanctions movement. I believe that that the use of economic force is probably a better way of getting Israel to see reason and recognize the vicious error of its own ways than, say, warfare. And some sort of horrific conflagration that consumes the entire entirety of Western Asia, which we now refer to the Middle East, and I don't know why. I think it's decidedly better. So, you know, personally, I don't buy Israeli things. Now, when I buy hot dogs, I buy Hebrew National, because I read the ingredients label, and there's, you know, not a lot of other stuff in there. And, well, you know, sausage making, Bismarck, two things you don't want to see made, laws and sausages. Although I've seen sausages made, it's not such a bad thing. I've seen laws made, and maybe there's a reason laws came before sausages in that line. So, and bear in mind, one of the things that I most despise about AIPAC is the fact that anybody who criticizes Israel is immediately called an anti-Semite, which could not be further from the truth. Complete bullshit. We criticize any number of governments around the world. Israel's the only one that gets to holler racist at you, or anti-Semite, or Nazi, if you point out that maybe it's not such a good idea to use precision-guided missiles provided by the United States to, say, slaughter 6-month-old Palestinian babies in their cradles. Which, you know, they do. Or use, white phosphorus munitions that are banned the world over. Which Israel also did. That effectively practicing a rolling genocide, a slow-moving genocide against the people of Gaza and the West Bank, is a pretty awful thing to do. But now, thanks to this bill, it could become a prior restraint on your freedom of speech to say that you support the BDS movement. I mean, let's say this bill were to become law, and frankly, it's got a chance with this kind of bipartisanship. And you're just walking around with your T-shirt that's just a, you know, white T-shirt, black letters, very generic, and it just has hashtag boycott Israel. If this thing becomes law, you are liable for at least a $250,000 fine and up to 20 years in prison. How about that? We don't even impose those kinds of fines on say, coal companies for poisoning people. Don fucking Blankenship did not face a $250,000 fine and 20 years in prison for incinerating 29 human beings at Upper Big Branch. But saying something Israel doesn't like can put you in the stir for 20 years and get you between $250,000 and $1 million in fines? God damn! Oh, well, Bob, but it says people engaged in interstate commerce. Calm down. Or foreign commerce. Yeah, that's a little slippery one, too. Guess what? You, sitting there right now, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whoever you are engaged in interstate commerce. Ever ordered anything from Amazon? Didn't come from inside your state. Now, did it? Ever bought a foreign car? You get the idea. That's pretty broad, isn't it? Anybody engaged in interstate or foreign commerce. And see, that language is used specifically as well. Because once you reference interstate commerce, then you bring in the interstate commerce clause of the Constitution of the United States. And if there is one single portion of the Constitution of the United States which lets the federal government do just about any goddamn thing it wants to, it's the Interstate Commerce Clause. Because while the Constitution is a relatively brief document, the framers didn't waste any time, and they recognized that it was going to be a key aspect of the young federal government to give the government the power to operate in interstate, to regulate and to control interstate commerce. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3. It's fairly simple, really. Article 1, Section 8, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Clause 1. Clause 3. To regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. Yeah, precisely, Clarity. So once you buy a banana, you're in commerce. That's it. Doesn't matter what you use that banana for. I got a jingle for Clarity on this one. What happens to that banana is protected speech and free association. Are you happy? Is that a banana in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? Right. James asks, anti-what? Protecting one group of Semitic people from another group of Semitic people is arguably pro-Semite, isn't it? Well, you have to understand. Genetically speaking, and this was suppressed a lot of years ago, there ain't a dime's worth of difference between an Israeli and a Palestinian if they've been around there for eons. It becomes a little bit more different when you talk about the Eastern European Jewry, which you know, occupied Israel as a result of, oh, God, the long history of the Balfour Declaration and what happened after the Second World War. But that word has been claimed, ownership of the word Semite has been claimed by Israel as meaning Israelis, or, you know, more broadly, people of Jewish heritage, genetics, descendants, whatever. But yes, in point of fact, both Arabic and Hebrew come from what is known as the Nilo-Semitic, Nilo-Saharan language group. But Jesus, if you start going down that road, that way lies madness. I actually prefer to discuss this issue because there's no nice way to go about it without having somebody hollering anti-Semite at you, which really pisses me off because, you know, not. You know, I think little Israeli babies should be able to sleep peacefully in their cribs, but what makes me intolerable to the Israel Uber Allahs crowd is that I think little Palestinian babies should be able to do the same. And slowly but surely, you know, Israel is learning. They've had this, you know, because they control the ins and outs in Gaza, for instance. Sandra sent this to me a while back. And because they put a chokehold on, like, electricity allowed to Gaza, the sewage sanitation system in Gaza has been failing of late. Because the sewage sanitation system is not allowed enough electricity to do its necessary sanitary job because Israel chokes off the electricity. So guess what happened? Well, the sanitation system failed. And let's call it effluvia from Gaza began washing up on Israeli beaches, causing the Israeli government to have to close the beaches because they were covered in shit. And it's not like, you know, the inscrutable crafty Gazans were shitting extra hard to you know, because Israel. It's because Israel insists upon the right to control the very existence of Palestine. And so on more than one occasion, Israeli beaches, which are a big tourist draw, they're lovely beaches, have had to be closed because they were shitty. Well, we could try that, Asa. Asa says, I guess we can dub this bill the Ashkenazi Protection Bill to avoid the Semitic conversation landmines. I don't even want to talk about this in terms of ethnicities or demographics. Because the absurdity of it becomes clear when you remove that from it. Let's say, you know, because Scott and I talked about that goofy list from BuzzFeed last night. Let's say that Ben Cardin of Maryland, Democratic senator, sponsored a bill with all the same language, that made it illegal to, oh, I don't know, boycott gluten. Or, since Wisconsinites hate trap music, boycott trap music. It gets you 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine at minimum. Would any of us have a hard time comprehending that that was so monumentally stupid as to, I mean, you know, how does this get past even legislative services in the Congress? Because it's so obviously a quashing of free speech. I mean, dig it. This program is heard, as I noted at the top of the program, all around the world. Now, if it came right down to it, I would argue that this program and me, Bob, are not involved in interstate commerce because we're not selling anything. And we're certainly not engaged in foreign commerce because we are not selling anything. Everything here is for free. But I also suspect that would not, within the context of this bill, which has a substantial chance of passage, again, because of the bipartisanship, that would probably not stand. Because the purpose is to eliminate any and all criticism of the Israeli government and its positions, tactics, and actions. So if this bill passes, it will become illegal for me, sitting here behind a microphone in West Virginia, to say that it is better to boycott Israeli business than to watch that entire region descend into bloodshed and chaos and mayhem that the biblical prophecies say will cause blood to run as high as the necks of horses. Prophecy. Now, unlike the religion industry, I don't get off on that notion. Now, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals who believe that millennial crap, they say, hoo-wee, well, I tell you what, when the blood of them Jews runs as high as a horse's neck, they sure gonna wish they had some Jesus then, ain't they? And then, the ones that survive, if they don't confess Jesus, Jesus is gonna look at me personally and say, gig him, put him to the sword. They really do. And that's behind at least half of the fetishization of Israel that takes place in our government. Go read the statutes. Go read the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Go read the Export Administration Act of 1979. You will be, to say the very least, chilled. Clarity points out, you use a bank, that's interstate commerce. Pro-apartheid, anyone? So, I mentioned there's 14 Democrats involved. Well, gosh, it's probably like, you know, in the Senate, it's Joe Manchin, Heidi Heitkamp, not the real Democrats. Oopsie. Ben Cardin is not known for being a rock-ribbed, wishy-washy conservative. Here's the funny thing. When he was interviewed about it, he didn't even know what was in his own bill. Well, I think I'd need to read that first. God damn, it's your bill! Let's see. Okay, Chuck Schumer is a co-sponsor. Well, I would expect Chuck Schumer to do that. Chuck Schumer is a member of the... And look, I mean, see, this is where... This is one of those moments, okay? Where perfection is the enemy of the good. I'm not going to sit here and scream, God damn it, Chuck Schumer's got to go, Jesus Christ. Because of this. But he damn sure needs to be opposed and taught and educated. It's not anti-Semitic to suggest that economic action should be taken to make Israel stop doing what it's doing to the Palestinian people. If the Palestinians had any kind of an economy whatsoever, they don't, because Israel, we might be having this conversation about them if they were using American-provided U.S. precision pinpointed missiles to slaughter, you know, Israeli children in their cradles. They got rocks and unguided rockets. And they're not made by, you know, and you know why their rockets suck so bad? They're not made in America. Other co-sponsors, though. How about Kirsten Gillibrand? Now, I've spoken favorably of her because she has opposed Trump at every goddamn turn. And upon being questioned about it, she said, you know, we'll give the ACLU a hearing on this. The ACLU has come into this. The ACLU is serious about this. Because, you know, the right to speak one's mind freely in this country and not be silenced by the government is kind of the textbook definition of a civil liberty. Ron Wyden, out in Oregon, signed on to it. Decent liberal Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, he's on there. So's Maria Cantwell of Washington. Speaking to The Intercept, Glenn Kaplan of Gillibrand's office said, "We have a different read of the specific bill language. However, due to the ACLU's concern, the senator has extended an invitation to them to meet with her and discuss their concerns." Different read? The read couldn't be much more clear. There's not a lot of room for a different goddamn read. Whoever knowingly violates or conspires to or attempts to violate any provision of Section 8A or any regulation, order, or license issued thereunder shall be fined in accordance with Section 206 of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. You go over and read that, and you know, that's when it starts getting good. Or awful, depending on how you feel about the Constitution of the United States, and, you know, freedom and liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Muzzle. There are more than 234 co-sponsors of the bill in the House of Representatives. Okay? And once again, 63 Democrats and 174 Republicans. Hint, that's enough for a discharge petition to simply get it an up or down vote in the House of Representatives. Fuck the committees. Second-ranking Democrat in the House, Steny Hoyer, on the bill. Still can't get him on the AIC Act. Go figure. Maybe if we had us some AIPAC money. But here's the ones that are going to piss you off. Ted Lieu, Adam Schiff, Eric Swalwell. Now, they're supposed to be progressive people who, you know, are leading the resistance. 3, 2, 1 on Twitter. Establishment shills! The ACLU has sent a letter to every member of the United States Senate. They say, among other things, this bill would impose civil and criminal punishment on individuals solely because of their political beliefs about Israel and its policies. There are millions of businesses and individuals who do no business with Israel or with companies doing business there for a number of reasons. Some, like those who would face serious financial penalties and jail time under the bill, actively avoid purchasing goods or services from companies that do business in Israel and the Palestinian occupied territories because of a political viewpoint opposed to Israeli policy. Others may refrain from Israeli-related business based on political beliefs, but choose not to publicly announce their reasoning. Still others do no business with companies in Israel for purely pragmatic reasons. Under the bill, however, only a person whose lack of business ties to Israel is politically motivated would be subject to fines and imprisonment, even though there are many others who engage in the very same behavior. In short, the bill would punish businesses and individuals based solely on their point of view. Such a penalty is a direct violation of the First Amendment. But again, if you view this as an Israel thing, you've lost before you're even out of the gate. It is a First Amendment thing. What? Okay, never mind the stupid-ass example I gave a little bit ago. Don't you reckon, based on the interview that he gave to the New York Times recently, that Donald Trump would dearly love to see a bill that forbids criticism of, I don't know, Russia and Vladimir Putin? Would Ted Lieu and Kirsten Gillibrand, would they have a hard time wrapping their heads around how unconstitutional that is? See, I'm the one who's been saying that with the rise of Trump, that we are not heading toward a constitutional crisis. We're in one. And this is another manifestation of it. Over at The Intercept, they noted, thus far, not a single member of Congress has joined the ACLU in denouncing this bill. Not one. And you know why? Because they want to go on getting reelected. Because if they are deemed, with a couple of exceptions, to be insufficiently obsequious, insufficiently lickspittle of Israel, they won't be members of Congress anymore. The Intercept asked Senator Chris Coons of Delaware, a Democrat, about his co-sponsorship of the bill. He said, I continue to support a strong U.S.-Israel relationship. Well, this isn't that. This is suppressing the free speech of everyday, workaday, garden variety, man and woman on the street, John and Jane six-pack Americans whose morals and conscience, remember, you know, over on the Republican side, you know, conscience. Goddamn, Hobby Lobby has a conscience. They can't be paying to provide diaphragms for them sluts. We've got an entire constitutional law decision based on that. But you cannot have conscience under this bill if your conscience says that people ought not do business with Israeli businesses or with Israel generally. That act of conscience is verboten. Some damned interesting concepts of conscience that we have, isn't it? Moreover, the Intercept points out that a number of people who signed on said, acted like they didn't even know what was in the bill. That's troubling. But it's also par for the course. Claire McCaskill, Democrat of Missouri. And I'm talking about Democrats because, you know, I expect this shit of Republicans. They talk about liberty and then they try to urinate and defecate all over it. See Hobby Lobby Supra. Claire McCaskill said, I certainly will take their position into consideration, talking about the ACLU, just like I take everybody's position into consideration. Meanwhile, speaking of business as usual, so it's fairly obvious that, you know, Chinless Mitch is still going to have a great big old debate about how many people the Republican Party wants to kick off health insurance in the United States. When he was asked about it earlier today as to whether people would be able to, whether his fellow senators, never mind us hoi polloi, whether his fellow senators would be able to see any proposed bill by the Republican Party prior to debate beginning on it in the Senate, he answered, we don't have the luxury of that. So Republicans are going to be asked to vote on a bill, and the entire Senate is going to be asked to vote on a bill, or not vote on it, but just vote to proceed, you know, MTP, motion to proceed. They're going to be asked to proceed on a bill that they haven't even seen. Right? This is not over. I keep saying it. And I keep being right. This is not over. So at this point in time, by the way, we still have $50 to go on Fab's challenge, and if Fab's challenge is met, that would take us down to $380 to go fundraising. And if we could knock that down a little bit, it would be great. You know, get out of the hole. Yeah, please. And I hate fundraising. Jesus. So let's do some conversation radio. Let's run over to the stress line and check in with, I suspect, Charlie. You still there, Charlie?
Yeah, Bob. This S-720, this is probably going to present a whole lot of problems in the Jewish community because there are some good, decent Jewish people that are not Zionists. They're anti-Zionists, and they don't support Israel at all. And the particular religion I was raised in, I was not raised in a premillennial religion. I don't believe in an end times crisis. I believe that the book of Revelation refers to the fall of the Roman Empire. And I just don't believe all that garbage. And I think it is deplorable the way that the people in Israel are treating the Palestinians. And if we could get the weapons and funding away from both sides and let them throw rocks at each other for a little while, they might learn to get along together.
You, Charlie, are an optimist. But, you know, you do bring up the fact that there is a difference between, I don't rely on me as an expert because I'm not. But I'm relying in turn on Jewish people who said, listen, there's being Jewish and there's being Zionist. And to be Jewish is not necessarily to be pro-Israeli. Or to be pro-Israeli doesn't necessarily... I mean, there are gradations. To be pro-Israeli does not necessarily mean, you know, the hardcore Israel Uber Alles crowd. So...
And, you know, there's some good, pretty good, decent Jewish people in this country that just don't follow that line of Zionism.
Well, there's one particular group, J Street. And I would be interested to get their take on this. Maybe it would be identical to that of AIPAC. I don't know. But again, I can talk about this without reference to Israel. It's the fact that it was.
Yeah.
It's the only difference being this is the only way you could bring in this kind of suppression of free speech, and not just be laughed out of the room. But the fact of the matter is, this is a free speech issue, not an Israel-Palestinian issue. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's a free speech issue, but I mean, still, I think it's deplorable that people cannot occupy the same land and get along with each other.
That's the overarching Israel-Palestine issue, and we're not going to solve it tonight or tomorrow night or in 100 years of programs. I should live so long.
Yeah, I realize that, but I just can't get over these people in the legislature. And there's a woman by the name of Lori Cardoza Moore that runs a website, Justice for All Nations, and she is she's eat up with Israel. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And she's kicked me off her website before because I went down, I said, let's look and see what Israel's given us. Oh, 2003, there was Rachel Corrie. 1986, there was Jonathan Pollard. 1967, the attack on the U.S. Liberty, USS Liberty. And I just went on, and everything I said was verifiable, and she threatened to sue me if I didn't get off her website.
Yeah, sue you. She invited. Well, never mind. But it's a miserable issue to talk about. And it's also one of those hot button issues that get people worked up. I used to have a short list of two or three topics that I hated bringing up on this program, Charlie, because they would invariably throw the community into the otherwise peace-loving, friendly Horn Family Community Congregation would be at each other's throats in no time flat. I've lost listeners over the topic of Israel. Agree with me on 99.9% of every issue I raised, but if I say that maybe Palestinian babies ought not be missiled in their beds, God damn it, I say, you son of a bitch. I'm not. So it's destructive. Now, let me just throw something out there. The research department, this time the research desk being manned by V.T. Blom in the chat room, points out J Street urges Congress to oppose Anti-Boycott Act. Okay, good for J Street. That's helpful. That's hopeful. Let the argument win or lose, rise or fall, on its own merits, Charlie.
Yeah, but I mean, what is the difference between a person who is Jewish and a person who is not Jewish? I don't see any. There's no difference. There's none. We're all human.
Yeah, but that's an even bigger can of worms because that's an argument to be had about what's the difference between somebody who's from North Sudan and South Sudan. It's a matter of who decides who needs killing the most. That's a human, that's a too clever by half primate question.
Nobody needs to be killed. We all need to learn to live together. I mean, we're human. We need to learn to live together.
I agree. And that is a laudable goal. But there are hurdles to be cleared before, we live together.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, and here in Nashville, there's a guy that down in Texas, he slit the throat of a woman in Texas. He spent 8 years in prison, got released early because of overcrowding, and he married a Baptist piano player, and he heads one of the mega Pentecostal churches down here in Madison, and he lives in a gated community in Goodlettsville, and it just makes no sense. I mean, there's a lot of people that if I had done something like that, I don't think that I would have seeked to rise to, that much, I don't know. I, you just, normally, if you do something like that, if you kill somebody, you kind of try to make things right the best you can and all that, rather than trying to seek out as much power as you can get as fast as you can get. And it's surprising. The religious community is surprising by leaps and bounds. I'm fed up with them.
Well, there's nothing like a Bronze Age mono god to make people lose their minds.
And you know, this guy up here in Kentucky that built all this theme park and all. I mean, the Bible plainly says you're not supposed to have idols before you. What is that? What is that replica of an ark? Is that not an idol? Because there's enough people go see it every year.
And goddamn, if there wasn't enough money went into it to cover the thing in gold, I mean, why not just put up a big old golden calf? I get your point.
Yep. And I don't know. I think, you know, this S720, I mean, this is the icing on the cake.
And it's also, you know, whenever we talk about issues of freedom of expression, freedom of conscience, inevitably the idea of a slippery slope comes up, Charlie. And this is the slipperiest of slopes, because I said, you know, wouldn't Trump love a bill that forbade criticism of Russia? Well, you know what? There's probably some people in the Congress that would be willing to sign on to something like that. And it's nothing new, okay? There was mention in the chat room or email, I forget where I saw it a few minutes ago. Oh, I know what it was. It was Steve from Georgistan. Steve said Ms. Karen wants to know how long before we bring back the Alien and Sedition Acts.
Yep.
This country, the government of this country has a habit of wanting to control what people see, think, hear, read, express, say. It was fairly early in the country's history in the 19th century when the federal government decided it was going to ban the importation of foreign books because senators said that they didn't want everyday Americans to get the wrong ideas about things. Okay.
And most of the people that support laws like this, they're the Article Fivers. They want to drop the gavel, destroy the Constitution, hold in its entirety, and start all over again.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a million years from now, we got that 6-foot race of sentient cockroaches. Maybe they'll make a better run of it than we did.
Well, I don't know. Well, we don't obey the Constitution we've got right now. You know, these people, I don't know what a conservative and a liberal is. I really don't consider the Horn family commune or whatever a liberal organization. They've got a lot of sense. I mean, you know, they've got a lot of good common sense about them, but I don't think they're very, you know, that whatever a liberal is, I don't think they fit that mold. And whatever conservative, the people that take on the label of conservative, they're just plain stupid.
Well, all of that, Charlie, is just shorthand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A conservative is somebody who conserves things, right? Well, I want to conserve the Appalachian Mountains. Does that make me a conservative? No, I would not. I guarantee you, I am not going to be on Ted Cruz's conservative Christmas card list. Okay. Every theory that underpins the formation of the government of the United States comes from European liberalism. Okay? It's a fact. It's not even subject to debate. But once again, you know, John Cornyn of Texas or that nutcut and Joni Ernst of Iowa would probably take a swing at you if you said that she favored liberal government. Words mean different things, and over time, they stop meaning anything. That's why I laugh every time I see some ideological purists saying, oh, neoliberalism. if I thought they understood the word, but now it's just a meaningless word that means anybody who ever brought Jill Stein a cold cup of coffee.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm serious whenever I ask you this. There might be people laugh at me, but I am serious. People from the area of the world where the country of Israel is at and the country of Palestine or whatever you want to call it is at, they're all Semites. I mean, so why would people of Jewish ancestry hog the word Semite when they're all Semite? They're all the same, you know. They're all humans. They're all the same. They're brothers, you know.
And I can't answer that question. But I do know that there's a train of thought that says that if you make the argument that they're all Semites, you're some sort of anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but Jewish or Gentile, what difference does it make? What difference does it make?
Well, it makes a difference as to what kind of pie you get in the sky when you die.
Yeah, I guess.
But
I don't know.
I mean, within the broad human family, there are pretty obviously different kinds of humans. Not different species, but just like there's three-leafed clovers and four-leaf clovers.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's differences. There's differences in the shape of the forehead. There's difference in the length of the earlobes or the size of the nose. I don't know that it's true, but I had an anthropology professor once upon a time whom I took at his word, who said that if you want to categorize human beings, you will have more success doing so by a chemical analysis of the composition of their earwax than you will by looking at the color of their skin. Okay, and I never caught him lying to me, so I'm guessing maybe he was telling me the truth about that, too. But then again, that was 30-plus years ago.
Yeah.
You've got an answer, though. Or not an answer. Reverbo just says, you know, I don't know. I just don't know. And nobody does. And that's what makes this particular problem so goddamned hard to sort. I mean, there's more, if you want to talk about ethnic differences, there's more ethnic difference between Irish and English. But even that can't be sorted out because there's a bunch of Viking blood running around and then Celtic and Angles and Saxons and Jutes and goddamn Normans and probably a little bit of Roman in there. I mean, you can't imagine that Caesar's legions and Claudius's legions were all just choir boys while they were stomping around Britannia. Nobody is pure what? Anything. This is a planet full of goddamn mutts, Charlie.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, I mean, in the United States, up where I'm from, up in Kingsport, up in that area up there, it's kind of hard to find a pure Cherokee Indian because they've intermarried with the Anglos and, you know, they've got along with each other and they've had families and stuff like that. And I don't see anything wrong with it, you know, and I can't see why the rest of the world can't be like that.
Well, see, there you go.
It just doesn't make sense. And from what I understand, you know, I mean, my father's people came from Wales, and my mother's people have not been here that long. They came from Ireland over when the potato famine happened. So, you know, I'm whatever else heritage I got in me, I've never wanted to waste the money to find out because it cost a hell of a lot of money to find out what all types of lineage you have in you, and it's just never interested me that much. I'm here.
Oh,
I'd love, I
freely confess, I would, if I had $100 laying around that didn't need to go to pay some goddamn bill, I would love to get that little Q-tip that you stick in your mouth and find out how many different ethnicities you have based on, because it's all just based on minute genetic variations. Okay, the difference between a human being and a goddamn rat. You know why we use rats in lab research? Because there's not a hell of a lot of genetic difference between them and humans.
Right. Yeah.
You know, one wrong left turn at Albuquerque, and, you know, you're a rat and not a human, genetically speaking.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd probably find out that I'm just, well, I am the whitest man on the radio. Oh, look at you, Bob. You're part Scots and part Irish, and, well, how about that? You're part English. Boy, I tell you what, you got some biological diversity going on for you. Yeah, I'm lucky my ear's not on the top of my head. Oh, look, maybe there's a little bit of Slavic in you. Hey, look, there's a German. Nope, you're still really, really white, Bob. Sorry. You know, and there you go.
Yeah, but I mean, it really doesn't. To me, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, I'm here and I'm whatever I am. I don't know what parts I've got in me from different areas of the world, but I guess I'm just weird. To me, it really doesn't make any difference.
Well, you know what does make a difference? What makes a difference is whether or not, at least in this country, Charlie, what makes a difference is whether or not you can freely speak your mind on any topic or no topic.
But I would love to see getting the weapons away from both sides in the Middle East and say, look, you people are going to learn to live together. But of course, that will probably never happen.
Well, I'm cynical. I don't necessarily think that they'd want to. There's been an abundance of proof from both sides that they have no desire to.
Yeah.
Me, I take the long view of history. I know some history, and I'm pretty sure I know how this is going to play out as long as there are no nuclear conflagrations involved. But it's just a prediction based on, it's a prediction of future performance, of future results based on past performance, and we all know that ain't necessarily how things work. But like I said, what matters out of this issue is not whether the Israelis and Palestinians can get along. What matters out of this issue is whether we've got a servile lickspittle Congress that is willing to do whatever AIPAC tells it to do and is willing to sacrifice the freedom of speech of the American people on the altar of a fetish.
Well, I'm not too sure that if this was passed, unless we've got a bunch of dishonest judges on the Supreme Court, which I'm sure...
Well, that's a big if right now, Charlie. Yes, you're right. If it was passed and it was signed into law, it would immediately face a constitutional challenge. In a normal world, you would think that the Supreme Court would take one look at it and go, get this out of here. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is a blatant prior restraint on free speech. But this is a Supreme Court that's occupied by dead-eyed John Roberts, Sam Alito, Slappy Thomas, and that guy in Merrick Garland's chair, and the Kennedy dude. And if the Kennedy dude decides to hang up the robe, then if you thought Neil Gorsuch was a right-wing weirdo, and he is, you ain't seen nothing yet. And you get that gang together, and they'll go, what? Is this law about Israel? I love Israel. Fuck the First Amendment. We got to stand up for Israel. And beep, goodbye, First Amendment.
I wonder if they'll put John Hagee on the Supreme Court.
They'd have to expand the fucking doors if they did, Charlie. Charlie, good talking to you. I'm going to get a couple more calls in. You take care, my friend. All right, bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Our buddy Charlie calling from Tennessee. Hey, good news. thanks to an anonymous contributor who usually prefers to remain anonymous. And thanks also to Henry. Thanks, Henry, very kindly. We have met Fab's challenge. That means we are now down to $375 to go in fundraising this evening. Boy, it'd be great if we could knock it down a little further in the next 25 minutes. So, because $375, that'd be $650 tomorrow night. But maybe we can. Maybe we can. And we'll probably get a little help from the overnight gang, too. Happy Less Than 100. But, yeah, we're at 375 right now. And let's run over to the Skype line and see what's on Scott's mind. Hey, Scott.
Hello, Professor Kincaid. How are you this fine Thursday afternoon?
That's not that. By God, that's Dr. Kincaid. I didn't go to redneck radio host school for 6 years to get called professor.
There you go. Okay,
something
doctor.
Like that. No, whatever.
I sit corrected.
You know what? By the way, before we get into the topic you called about.
Which we won't, believe me.
Oh, stop.
Trust me.
No, we will, I promise. You know what? Okay. You know what you compelled me to do?
Uh-oh.
I went and found the tornado episode of WKRP last night.
I don't remember that one. Tell me about that.
It was based on the real tornado that hit, I forget what town it was, some Ohio. But anyway, it contains the magnificent scene in which Les Nessman looks at the big guy and says, I don't know what to do. He says, what do you mean? You read what's in the packet, because he's opened up the civil defense packet.
Yeah.
And if you recall your days in radio, you know, you didn't open up the civil defense packet. That's why there were tests, because if it ever was really serious, there were code authenticators and all kinds of stuff in there. It was just like inside the B-52 on Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
And so... The requisite number of warnings came across, and Les opened the packet. And he said, "Big guy, this doesn't fit. It's about what to do when the Russians attack or the Chinese." And he said, "Well, just wherever it says Russian, change it to tornado." Great idea. So he says, "If you see one of the godless Russian or tornadoes." It's just very funny.
It was a great show.
Yeah, it was.
I think everybody who's ever worked in radio, even for a brief time, usually has worked with someone similar to any number of those characters in that show. Always liked that show, WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yeah, but that's not why you called, so I just wanted to throw that in there.
Just to put a cap on the story about the tornado that happened about 6 months before I left Cincinnati for the sunny climes of San Diego, it was the dead of night. The warnings had come across the cable TV, like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm standing out on my front step because I know it's headed east from the west. In Indiana, and that son of a bitch apparently passed in a straight line about 4 miles north of where I was standing, and you could actually feel the change in air pressure as it approached and then went by. It was the damnedest thing, very, really eerie in the dead of night and stone cold cemetery silent as all of that was happening, and it ended up hitting a couple of houses several miles from where I lived, and I believe an elderly couple was killed. You know, because in the dead of night, you know, depending on how deeply you sleep, you know, even if they run the air raid sirens, the warning sirens, you know, you don't hear them or you don't react right away. So anyway, that was the end of the tornado story. I do have an answer, maybe a partial answer for Charlie, who was wondering why, you know, the Israel gets so many people giving forth with preferential treatment. But before I do that, you mentioned lab rats, okay, in experimentation.
Yeah.
And it always fascinated me in the late 60s and into the 70s when the artificial sweetener, cyclamates, were being tested. And then later on, saccharin went through its bout of testing for safety. How the hell do they get those rats to operate those vending machines to buy those sodas? Like 150 of them, each rat would have to have a day in order to have any risk of health issues at all.
That wasn't just cyclamates. The drinking 200 cans of soda was with regard to saccharin.
Yeah. Well, the cyclamates were a similar thing. There was some kind of cancer risk that they said was there, and I think they found that neither of them caused any problem. And if you had 200 cans of soda in a single day, well, then you deserve what happens to you, because you have eliminated the factor of personal responsibility for your own fucking well-being.
But you've just opened the door on something I learned a little bit about last week in D.C.
Okay, go ahead.
When you are studying with, say, lab rats,
mm-hmm.
the problem you always face is dosing. And I'm bringing very much a layman's approach to this, because I certainly can't bring any scientific authority to it.
Yeah, because of the body mass and the size.
No, because I'm not a scientist.
No, not your body mass.
I mean, I'm bringing a layman's approach to this because I'm not a scientist.
Okay.
But it's not just body mass. What you can create ratios. You know, human body mass to rat body mass. That's just math. Okay.
Yeah.
But the problem becomes one of trying to obtain collectible data that is statistically relevant and scientifically rigorous in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah.
So, for instance, you'll see, that's why you see things like fruit flies used in research, because goddamn, you can have 100 generations of fruit flies in 2.5 weeks. I'm exaggerating. But in the case of lab rats and in that saccharin study, the reason that the Food and Drug Administration didn't say, well, that's just stupid, nobody's going to drink 200 cans of soda, and the reason that the saccharin industry said, well, that's just stupid, is because, you know, the reason the Food and Drug Administration didn't say it, and the reason the industry lobby group did say it, is because of the essential nature of the science involved. And that is, you don't have years. If you think there's a problem, okay, you don't have years in which to wait and see if the problem develops.
Yeah, especially if the substance in question is a heavily used thing.
Right. So what you have to do is try to come up with a dose that will give you either no results or some result, and still remain scientifically rigorous and statistically viable. And so that's why you get a massive dose of saccharin in a lab rat, and that's why the intratracheal placement of blasting dust in the lab rat was larger than probably a human being would get in one good breath, but at the same time, it was mimicking the amount of dust that would collect inside a human being over the course of, say, 5 or 10 years. Okay, so like in the lab rats with the saccharin, what they were trying to do was simulate the exposure that a person could expect to have over, say, a lifetime.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really that it was predicated on somebody drinking 200 cans of soda. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, I love to share when I learn new things.
And it is fascinating, because it seems like every third day there's, let's take coffee, for instance, since we were talking about coffee the other day. Every 3 days there seems to be some new groundbreaking study result having to do with either coffee is great for you or it'll kill your ass, you know? And who the hell knows what to think of anything because of the conflicting studies and results? And then you've got the industry sometimes will pay for these studies, so that makes, you know, whatever they come up with suspect. You know, it's a, I just show up, do everything in moderation, and the hell with it, you know, because I'm not getting out of this thing alive, okay? I'm going to die eventually, and I'll try to do things that'll keep me from doing it sooner than I would prefer, but ultimately it's a crapshoot, you know. It's thousands of people around the country wake up dead every day, so to speak. And in most cities, they die in alphabetical order if you look in the newspaper. Never fails. But I've got a biblical question for you, but I've also got an answer for Charlie, okay? He was wondering why a lot of politicians and religious folk give Israelis preferential treatment and all that. I believe there's a Bible verse along the lines of this, and I found it because I was going by memory, old memory at that, and it's Isaiah 60, verse 12, and it says, "For the nation and kingdom that will not serve you," that means you, Israel, "shall perish. Those nations shall be utterly laid waste." And it all dates back to that crazy notion that the bush was burning and a voice emanated, said to be God, to Moses. And that's apparently part of where it all got started, you know. And then Abraham, the business of the chosen people. And it's just so much nonsense.
It is, Scott. And I don't disagree with your interpretation. But I will say that it's deeper because, you know what? I'll bet you there's all kinds of religious texts and oral traditions in which the people producing the text say, God likes us best. And anybody that doesn't like us, God is going to make, you know, really nasty boogers happen in their nose.
Yeah.
All right? He's going to give them terrible body odor and bad breath. And people won't invite them to parties anymore because we are the chosen people.
Well, I grew up with that in the Catholic Church.
Right, I know you did. I mean, let me take this a little further.
Okay.
The difference is European culture didn't appropriate any of those other religious works wholesale. Okay? European culture did not completely digest the Egyptian Book of the Dead. If European culture had, we'd all be hoping that some really scary monster didn't eat our soul because our hearts weighed more than a feather. All right?
Okay.
In terms of time and being around, you know, the stuff that's in Genesis, when that was being written down, the Hindu cultures had an established religious tradition for a hell of a lot longer.
Yeah.
But there wasn't enough cultural connection to them.
So that anybody would
for them to be appropriated by European culture.
Yeah.
But by virtue of the spread of the religion that Paul invented, Christianity, that brought along the Old Testament with it, which came with a handy-dandy convenient creation myth and lots of handy-dandy preferential treatment by God stuff that the Europeans could then appropriate for themselves, okay? I mean, look. There are old, you know, I was talking last night about reading Barbara Tuchman. She wrote a book called Bible and Sword that really makes clear the fetishization by Great Britain of all those stories. I mean, Jesus, there are myths that go, you know, Joseph of Arimathea came to Britain. I mean, all kinds of crazy shit. Okay?
And by the way, thank you for the recommendation of that book that you just mentioned, and also the Mirror book by Barbara Tuchman. I plan to get both of those because they both sound... I was reading up on both of them last night because you mentioned the
author.
You
can't go wrong with her.
Yeah, because there are areas where I'm just not as keen on my knowledge as I ought to be. And that would be one area. And I find that stuff probably almost as fascinating as you do. Because anything that'll help get a clearer picture on how we got to be the dysfunctional tribe that we are, that is the human tribe.
Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a good thing, Scott, that we didn't wholesale adopt Hindu social and cultural and religious thinking, because we'd be, you know, Europe would have had an even bigger problem than it had with serfs and peasants and villains and whatnot, because we would have adopted, you know, the idea of the untouchable caste.
Well, and not to mention problems with death and disease, simply because of the mountains of cow shit in the byways, because the cattle are roaming free because they're their chosen species. Is that the right group? Don't the Hindus?
Yeah, no. You get, and I'm not trying to be racist or classist or ethnist, whatever, in any of this, but the problem goes back to the co-option of a cultural document. You know, we talk now in the modern era, we talk about, okay, so when the governor of Oklahoma's daughter shows up in red face and an Indian war bonnet, we say, we criticize her and say that she really shouldn't engage in that kind of cultural appropriation. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because, because indigenous peoples in the United States and Canada and this entire hemisphere are not just souvenirs or trinkets or objects of scorn or party favors or any of that shit. They are and you know what? I would apply that to the Old Testament, okay? Because the entire history of Christianity, Scott, is nothing but the history of the cultural appropriation of a document that has a very limited, specific set of meanings to the people who own it,
mm-hmm.
that was then appropriated and turned into something entirely different. You know, look, 2,000 years of travel across Europe and then across the Atlantic Ocean, and lo and behold, there in 1855, there's my ancestor, Sam Black, standing in a church in southern West Virginia, screaming about how black people were designed by God to be the slaves of white people. And he can't make that argument without the Bible.
Right.
All right? So part of the, I mean, to bring this back around and maybe make some sense out of all of this, that whole I shall bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you.
Yeah.
Well, it was co-opted by Europeans who were, you know, three generations removed from fighting with the buzzards over what the wolves didn't want, and took it at face value and said, oh, okay. But not quite enough to not periodically just go and slaughter all the Jews for the fuck of it. Oh, God, they make their bread out of baby's blood.
Yeah.
Oh, they're poisoning the well. That's why we've got a plague. You know, to the point that the Pope had to say, hey, quit killing the Jews. During the Black Plague.
Yeah.
It didn't stick. But the history of, you know, the history of so they want the book, they want all the violent, nasty shit that's in it, but by the same time, you know, they kill Christ. Right?
Yeah.
And so there's this pick and choose, and that's the curse of any religion. You can pick and choose what you like. Oh, wait, it says here in the book here that, you know, and as religions go, of the three monotheistic religions, the oldest one is Judaism, the middle kid is Christianity, and then the Johnny-come-lately is Islam.
Yeah.
And they're all interpreting one you know, one deity for their own benefit.
And the pity of it is, in today's world, more than a few of us are influenced, not influenced, we're controlled by the actions of our rulers who play one against the other, you know, whether it's Christian, Jewish, or a Muslim, and it's all the same nonsense, in my estimation. Now, I could be wrong, and if I am, I'll burn in hell, but it's like, how undiscerning do we have to be to take this collection of fairy stories from any of these three major monotheistic theologies,
or any other,
and orchestrate our laws around them and our lives around them, and who gets what around them, you know?
But Scott, it all comes back to the existential dread of death, and so.
It's that, but it's also this endless one-upsmanship, and I want to be God's special person sort of mindset that all of these groups have. And won't they be surprised if it turns out that they latched onto it because somebody eons ago made the shit up, okay? And we would have been better off just going in the natural order of things, relating one-to-one and person-to-person and group-to-group on an equal footing that Charlie kind of alluded to, you know, as far as the Jews and the Palestinians throwing rocks at one another, maybe they could learn to get along. But there's too much goddamn money and power in not doing that, not doing the rational thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it just tries my patience and burns my butt.
Well, see, and that's why, I mean, that's why I'm trying really hard and failing, obviously, to talk about this particular piece of legislation without recourse to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Yeah, and good for you that you are, because I would never have heard of that law. It's the most asinine thing that's come along, but if you wait, there'll probably be one worse.
Well, it certainly looks like, I mean, if this thing becomes constitutional, there's going to be other, you know, thou shalt not speak ill of Pooty Poot.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can pass this one, you can pass that one.
And
goodbye First Amendment.
Yeah, well, there you go. And maybe that's the whole idea from the get-go. That's what they're up to, because they talk about how the left wants to do this, that, and the other and control everything. Bullshit. The right has tried to control way more, not only in this country, but in any country on the face of the earth. The right-wing conservative elements in each of these places has done more damage than any lefty that you could come up with, at least in my view.
Yeah. And with that, we got to get out of here, Scott.
Well, let's get the hell out and have a martini.
Or a cup of coffee. Is this freeze-dried? It's very good.
Yeah. There you go.
All right.
And by
the way, the pilot, the other thing I watched today, the pilot to WKRP is also on YouTube. And, oh, my God. Oh, it's just wonderful.
I'll check them out. And also the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, put that at the top of the list, for God's sake.
That's at the top.
Because I want Steve in New York to know that you're no longer a Lebowski virgin. And I want you to get the line references and everything.
And it's about fucking time. How old is that movie? Like 15 years or something?
No, late 90s.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah. The earliest of the aughts. Anyway, we're out of here, Scott. Take care.
Okay, Bob.
Bye now. All right, so we close the program. Having hit a lick, and thanks to everybody who shoveled dirt into the hole, you know, so we could climb up a little bit. Thank you very kindly, one and all. The fundraising goal for tomorrow, depending on what happens with the overnight crew, fundraising goal for tomorrow will be, if it stays right where it is right now, $650. Hopefully it'll come down. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going. Thank you for engaging in your finite time and sharing in listening or participating in this program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you also to Steve from Georgistan, utility chat room moderator. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And remember, you know, it's a little bit at a time, but a little bit goes, sometimes a little bit is the beginning of a lot. If you will go to smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch, they will receive a tiny little bit of the of your purchase price every time you buy something there. So smile.amazon.com and choose Coal River Mountain Watch. Thanks. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.